chapter 5, text 27 and 28. We'll recite text 27 together. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses and intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. Purport: being engaged in Krishna consciousness, one can immediately understand one's spiritual identity, and then one can understand the Supreme Lord by means of devotional service. When one is well situated in devotional service, one comes to the transcendental position, qualified to feel the presence of the Lord in the sphere of one's activity. This particular position is called liberation in the Supreme. After explaining the above principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as to how one can come to that position by the practice of the mysticism or yoga known as Ashtanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. In the sixth chapter, the subject of yoga is explicitly detailed, and at the end of the fifth, it is only preliminarily explained. One has to drive out the sense objects such as sound, touch, form, taste and smell by the pratyahara process in yoga, and then keep the vision of the eyes between the two eyebrows and concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed lids. There is no benefit in closing the eyes altogether, because then there is every chance of falling asleep. Nor is there benefit in opening the eyes completely, because then there is a hazard of being attracted by sense objects. The breathing movement is restrained within the nostrils by neutralizing the up-moving and down-moving air within the body. By practice of such yoga, one is able to gain control over the senses, refrain from outward sense objects, and thus prepare oneself for liberation in the Supreme. This yoga process helps one become free from all kinds of fear and anger, and thus feel the presence of the Super Soul in the transcendental situation. In other words, Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of executing yoga principles. This will be thoroughly explained in the next chapter. A Krishna conscious person, however, being always engaged in devotional service, does not risk losing his senses to some other engagement. This is a better way of controlling the senses than by the Ashtanga Yoga. Hare Krishna. Translation once again. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses and intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So Krishna is about to conclude the fifth chapter, and next he'll be beginning the sixth chapter, which is entitled Dhyana Yoga, wherein he is going to describe in detail the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And there he goes into great length of describing how a yogi, how he should sit, how he should meditate, where he should sit, how he has to go through the processes of Yama, Niyama, Pratyahara, etc., etc., and finally come to the point of Samadhi. But interesting enough, Krishna concludes the sixth chapter by telling, Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yoma same yukta tamomata. He says that who is the greatest of all the yogis? Yoginam api sarvesham. Of all the yogis, Tame Yukta Tamomata, according to my opinion, who is the greatest yogi? Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam. With great faith, one who worships me, Tame Yukta Tamomata. From within the core of his heart, one who remembers me and worships me with great faith, he is the highest of all yogis. That is, Krishna is telling, that is his opinion. What other opinion can we take except that of Krishna's? So what Krishna is trying to say is, one who practices bhakti yoga, that is devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not officially, but from his heart, he is the greatest yogi. Officially, in the sense, in today's world, people perform religion many times in a very official way. One goes to office to get money for a livelihood. There is no love involved there. There is no feelings involved there. Nobody loves his boss. One is working under a boss because he is going to pay salary at the end of the month. One might even flatter the boss so that he will give him promotion. So when religion becomes coming to the temple asking for something material, thinking that if I come to the temple, the Lord will give me, supply the necessities of life, then it is no better than going to an office. And just like you flatter the boss, people sometimes flatter the God in the temple. That, my dear Lord, if you, for example, students, they pray to the Lord that if you help me pass my examinations, then I'll put a little amount of money in the hundi. So that is like flattering the Lord. There is no feelings involved, there is no love involved. So Krishna is telling here that not official performance of devotional service, expecting something in return, or expecting some material benefits in return, that is not bhakti. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam. That is, from the heart, with feelings and love for the Supreme Lord, one who serves me is the greatest of all yogis. That's what Krishna says. But somehow, the tendency of the people of this world is, even though Krishna clearly states, who is the greatest of all yogis, one who is my devotee is the greatest of all yogis, Krishna clearly says, but still the tendency is to become attracted by the glamour of Ashtanga Yoga. So people are very impressed. If they see someone performing some asanas, what to speak of getting impressed by seeing people who actually exhibit mystic powers? Now the Vedic Shastras, they explain that one who practices Ashtanga Yoga, one very meager side benefit is, he obtains good health. People are even impressed with that nowadays. But a person who performs Ashtanga Yoga for a prolonged period of time, he goes on to achieve mystic perfections. Mystic perfections like, he can get an object from a distant place, or he can become smaller than the smallest, he can become bigger than the biggest, or he can control people's minds. These are mystic powers, yogic siddhis. which can be obtained by performing Ashtanga Yoga properly for a prolonged period of time. And when a spiritual seeker sees this, he becomes very impressed. He might feel that this is the goal of spirituality. But actually, the Vedas clearly explain that this is not the goal of spirituality. In fact, Krishna himself says that the highest perfection of yoga is not mystic power, it is bhakti. Still, people of this world, we get impressed easily. And many times, people who exhibit such mystic powers, they are given the title of God in today's world. Now there are very few people who can exhibit these mystic powers. And they make good name in history. In India, there are a few more, but in the Western world, hardly anyone in Western history has exhibited these mystic powers. And those few who have, they have made it big in the history books. And in scientific terminology, this Vashita Siddhi is Siddhi by which you can control people's mind or cloud people's mind. That is called psychokinesis. Now in 1930s, very few people in history exhibited such mystic powers in the Western world. But there was one person, his name was Wolf Messing. This Wolf Messing was a Polish person in the 1930s, and he had the power of psychokinesis. He could control people's minds. And he was well known at that time. People like Albert Einstein, Mahatma Gandhi personally met him because he had become so famous. But then in 1937, he publicly declared, he made a prophecy that if Adolf Hitler tries to expand in the Eastern Hemisphere, he'll be killed. As soon as he made that prophecy, immediately the German government was after him. And there was a prize money of 200,000 marks for anyone who catches him. And so he had to flee. And he took refuge in Russia. And at that point of time, Russia was under Stalin. Very famous dictator from Russia. So this Wolf Messing, he was making money by performing shows wherein he publicly exhibited mystic powers. He could hypnotize people, fool around people and get away. So while he was performing one such show, Stalin's men came and took him away. And took him straight in front of Stalin, the dictator. And Stalin had heard about his powers, his paranormal powers. So Stalin, he was not a person to waste time. So immediately he challenged this person. If you have such powers, then you should be able to steal a bank. So this person said, no problem. So he went to Moscow Ghost Bank. So whatever he was performing with this bank was under close examination by Stalin's men. So this person entered the bank, took a blank piece of paper, presented to the bank teller. The teller saw the blank piece of paper and he filled Wolf Messing's suitcase with 100,000 rubles, which is Russian currency. So this person, in front of everybody, closed his suitcase, went from the bank. And after some time he returned, and he again gave back the suitcase to the bank teller. The bank teller was surprised. Just now you presented a check of 100,000 rubles and took away the money. Why have you come to return the money? So Wolf missing, he told the teller, look at that check now. So he looked at the check, it was a blank piece of paper. So the bank teller had such a shock that he had a mild heart attack and he fell to the floor. And Stalin's men were watching all this at close quarters. But Stalin wasn't satisfied. He was a very scientifically minded person. He couldn't believe such a thing could happen. So what he did, he told Messing, this time you have to escape from high level security. So he was put inside a government building with three levels of high security guards. We're closely trying to monitor that he doesn't escape. But to the surprise of the guards, very soon they found Mr. Messing on the streets waving at them and having a smile on his face. Stalin was still not satisfied. He said, if you truly have mystic powers, try to come into my private quarters. Now Stalin, a person who had murdered millions of people, definitely was not a loud person. People were after him. So there was a group of security guards outside his home, and there was a group of security guards inside. And when Wolf Messing entered into the security, the guards saluted him, let him in. And the people inside made way for him to come and meet Stalin. And very soon Stalin looks up and sees Wolf Messing face to face. What had Wolf Messing done? He had influenced and clouded the minds of the security guard, who thought that he was one of the close men of Stalin. Now Messing didn't look anywhere close to that close associate, nor were his mannerisms anything close to that of the associates of Stalin. Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Still, he had the power to get through. And now Stalin was convinced. And then Wolf Messing would go throughout Russia making performances and earning money. But quite an impressive record. Even 50 years later, we use these examples to help people understand that there are higher powers than modern science can understand. There is something called mystic power also, which is beyond the range of modern science. It is called paranormal, beyond the understanding of modern science. So these mystic powers, they have the power to attract people. And even a spiritual seeker might get attracted to such things, considering it to be the perfection of spirituality. But Srila Prabhupada, he says that this, what Wolf Messing exhibited, is a faint, watered-down version of Vashita Siddhi, which was exhibited quite normally by the mystic power, by the mystics of bygone ages in ancient India. But the perfection of yoga is yoginam api sarveshana madgate antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yoma samay yukta tamamata. The highest perfection of spirituality is not to obtain this mystic power, what to speak of performing some asanas for good health. actually spirituality means devotional service. What to speak of mystic powers, people become even influenced by external so much. For example, in Africa, tantric black magic is quite common, or at least it was quite common previously. So black magic is something which is mysticism used to harm others, and it was extensively practiced in Africa. So recently one devotee had come from Africa, and I asked him the question that it was quite popular earlier, but nowadays even the Africans, they are not practicing such tantric mystic powers. Why is that so? He said that even to practice black magic, one has to control his senses. But the African people are so much victimized, or rather they are so much influenced and impressed by the glamour of the West, that they are unable to perform austerities and even perform such low level mysticism. So the point is, a conditioned soul is prone to become influenced and impressed by the externals. People are so impressed by America, the American culture, simply the externals. Seems to be so nice, so clean, so sophisticated. But beneath the thin veil, there is horror, actually horror. It's like there was Hitler's number two man. His name was Himmler, as far as I can remember. So in society, this person who was Hitler's man, he was considered to be a gentleman. The way he spoke, very polite, very respectful. The way he behaved, his mannerisms. And he liked classical music. And he supported classical music and works of art. So by any normal standards, he was impressive. He was an impressive gentleman. How polite, how respectful. But behind the scene, what was he? He was instrumental in killing lakhs of innocent Jews, brutally murdering them in concentration camps. Now, can one call this gentleman cultured? Or can one call him gentleman in the first place? Now, who is a gentleman and which society is cultured is a deep subject matter. It is not the externals. So the West, so sophisticated, so refined it looks like. Even in the West, if you're on the street, and you're riding your vehicle, at any traffic signal, if two or three cars meet at a junction, and there is no traffic signal there, each driver will tell the other, "You go first, please." And the other person will say, "You first, please." And in this way, they're all waiting for a long period of time. At last, one person agrees to go ahead. So polite, so well behaved. And actually, Indians become very impressed. Why? Because in India, even if there is a traffic signal, people are in such a hurry that there is traffic jam. But the West, even without traffic signal, if you have to cross the road, if it's a zebra crossing, and you're alone crossing the signal, still the vehicle, even if it is speeding, it will halt and let you pass. And in India, even if there is a red traffic signal, clearly visible, still, unless 10-15 people come in front and stop the truck driver, can't you see the signal? Then he will stop. And if there were only one person, maybe he'll run over that person also. So 10-15 people have to come and stop him, and then the lorry driver will stop. So seeing this in India, the Indians, when they go to the West, they become very impressed. Wow! What sophistication! What culture! What refinement of character! But just like Mr. Hemner, he was also cultured, he also seemed to be refined. But behind the scene, corpse of lakhs of innocent Jews. Similarly, behind the thin veil of the Western civilization, we see millions of innocent animals being slaughtered every single day. Brutally. Would a gentleman cause such harm to innocent creatures? And what to speak of innocent creatures, the corpses of unborn babies. Uncountable. So many abortions. The innocent child is not even allowed to see the light of the day. He is murdered within the womb. This is behind the veil of Western civilization. We dealt with meat eating, we have dealt with illicit sex. Then there is gambling and intoxication. Now the intoxication industry, what is their strategy? When a child comes to the teens, forget about adulthood, so much bombardment is done upon him that he becomes a slave of their commodity, their brand of cigarettes, for example. Because if they capture the young with their brand of cigarettes, they'll be hooked to that brand for the rest of their lives. So their key targets are youngsters. So the most innocent people, the animals, unborn babies, and children, they are the targets. Helpless people, they are the targets of Western civilization. So-called refined cultured Western civilization. And then, the women. All the weaker sections of society. The sophistication and the glamour of Western civilization is based upon exploitation of women, more or less. Where women are treated as a commodity for exploitation, for selling products in the market. Whereas a truly cultured society respects the weaker sections of society. And in the sophisticated Western world, you won't find old men here and there, or old women here and there. Why? Because as soon as they become old, they're all taken to a particular place. Old age home, and now there are old age communities. They're all kept there. So that young people who want to enjoy life are not reminded of old age. It's like if you're eating nice food and the person who is eating food in front of you suddenly starts vomiting. He may not vomit into our plate, but still seeing his vomit, we can't relish our food. So similarly, young people who are in their youth, who want to enjoy their senses, they don't like to see the miseries of old age. So old people are conveniently taken to a different location in old age homes and old age communities and separated from society so that the mainstream society retains its glamour. So when we see the so-called cultured and refined Western civilization behind the thin veil, what is worth seeing is the corpse, the blood of millions of innocent animals, of millions of innocent unborn babies, of what we can see is exploited women and old men suffering in old age homes. Is that culture? But somehow, the tendency is to become attracted by the externals. What is truly culture is found in the Vedic civilization, wherein all the weaker sections of society are given full protection. The Vedas say that a person in the grihastha ashram, before he eats food, he has to feed all the animals, even the little insects, what to speak of cows, dogs, cats, etc. After they are fed, he takes his meal. And every woman is respected as a mother, except one's own wife. And the mother is given great respect, great honor. And the mother is served in a civilized society. And in the Vedic culture, old men and women, they are given special treatment, special respect. They are especially honored. What to speak of putting them into imprisonment. And the children are especially taken care of so that they don't become victims of bad habits. This is truly a civilized society, the Vedic society. And when it comes to spirituality, again the tendency is to become attracted by the externals, to be attracted by mysticism, to be attracted by some magic tricks. But the Bhagavad Gita tells us that what is actual spirituality? Actual spirituality is Bhakti Yoga. To demonstrate this, there is a beautiful story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that of Maharaj Ambarish. So this Ambarish Maharaj, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was a king. Once he performed Ekadashi fasting. And when he was about to break the Ekadashi fast during a certain period of time, suddenly Durvasa Muni appeared, who was a great mystic. We spoke of the mystic powers of wolf messing. And even 55 years later, we are quite impressed by what he performed. But Durvasa Muni, this was child's play for him, what wolf messing did. That was the power of his mysticism. So Durvasa Muni came, and because he was a guest, and because Ambarish Maharaj was his host, the etiquette was he had to first feed the guest and then eat himself. But Durvasa Muni said, I want to take bath first before I take my meals. Because this is Vedic civilization where people used to take bath regularly. So Durvasa Muni, he went to take his bath. Meanwhile, Ambarish Maharaj was observing that the time of breaking the fast was approaching. And the Ekadashi fast is such that if you don't break the fast on time, then it is as good as not performing the fast at all. So it is mandatory to break the fast on time. So Ambarish Maharaj, he thought, what can be done now? On the one hand, first I have to feed Durvasa Muni, then only eat myself. On the other hand, I have to break my fast as well at the prescribed time. So he was in a dilemma. Then he decided, if I drink a little bit of water, it is as good as breaking the fast. At the same time, I won't break the etiquette of eating before the guest. So he drank a little bit of water. But see the mysticism of Durvasa Muni. Now, a student of Bhagavatam, when he reads it, he doesn't think twice also. He is not surprised by this mystic power of Durvasa Muni, nor is it highlighted in the Bhagavatam. Durvasa Muni, who was miles away taking a bath, immediately understood that Ambarish Maharaj had drunk water. Now in today's world, if someone has this basic mystic power, he'll make the headlines. But for Durvasa Muni, it was secondary. And even the Bhagavatam doesn't highlight this mystic power of Durvasa Muni, because a higher grade of mystic power is yet to be exhibited by Durvasa Muni as the story proceeds. So Durvasa Muni comes back and he becomes terribly angry. "You have insulted me," he told Ambarish. "How dare you eat food before I have been fed?" And he became so angry that on the spot he removed a single hair from his head and dashed it against the floor. Now our hair, lakhs of them fall into the floor in a barber shop. Nothing happens. It all goes to the dustbin eventually. Nothing comes out of it. But Durvasa Muni, a single hair from his head, when he dashed it against the floor, came a fiery demon. So fierce, it looked like he could devour the entire world. That was the power of Durvasa Muni's mysticism. Now what wolf messing he did was nothing in front of what Durvasa Muni exhibited. But still, Ambarish Maharaj was a devotee of the Lord. Forget about being impressed, he was not even afraid. Because he was completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of God. So here, a clear demonstration of the powers of Bhakti Yoga and the powers of mysticism. Durvasa Muni exhibited such mysticism and Ambarish Maharaj was absolutely fearless. And he just folded his palms. And he was continuing to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What happened next? The Sudarshana disc, which was within the house of Ambarish Maharaj, came outside. The Sudarshan disc, which belonged to Lord Vishnu had given it to Ambarish Maharaj, being pleased with his devotional service. Now the Bhagavatam explains Pragdishtam. That means Lord Vishnu already knew that Ambarish Maharaj is going to face trouble in the future and he will require the help of the Sudarshana disc. So, beforehand, Lord Vishnu had already kept his own Sudarshana disc in Ambarish Maharaj's palace for his protection. This is the power of Bhakti Yoga. As soon as a person starts performing devotional service, immediately he is under the direct protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Yogeshwar, who is the origin of all mysticism, who is the origin of all powers in this world. So if we have his protection, who can harm us? Not possible. So Ambarish Maharaj is unaffected. And the Sudarshan disc immediately destroys this fiery demon and then starts chasing Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni, with all his mystic powers, all he could do is that mystic power helped him run away from the Sudarshana disc. He traveled all over the world, all over the universe, tried to hide in the Sumeru mountains, but the Sudarshana disc was right behind him. He went to Brahmalok. He went to the abode of Lord Shiva, seeking help. But Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, all of them said, we can't help you. Maybe Lord Vishnu can help you. Then finally, when he went to Lord Vishnu, even Lord Vishnu said, I also cannot help you. Because you offended my devotee. Aham bhakta paradhino. I am conquered by someone who performs bhakti yoga. So here we see, person who performs bhakti yoga conquers the Supreme Lord by his love. And a person who is expert in performing ashtanga yoga is running for his life. And Lord Vishnu says, you have to fall at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj to be relieved from the Sudarshana disc. And Durvas Muni, with all his mysticism and mystic powers, he ran back to the place where Ambarish Maharaj was still standing, waiting for Durvasa. And he prostrated himself in front of Ambarish Maharaj and begged his forgiveness, saying that, being a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are most powerful. And you are on the topmost stage of spiritual perfection. And because I tried to harm you, I myself got into trouble. So this particular episode from the Srimad Bhagavatam clearly shows that devotional service is the highest. A person who is performing devotional service, he has already achieved the perfection of all spirituality. In fact, a devotee possesses all the mystic powers automatically. But he is reluctant to exhibit it. Why? Because it is only a disturbance. For example, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Rishabdev, who is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord himself, is described that he was caught in a forest fire and he died in a forest fire. So Parikshit Maharaj was hearing this from Shukadev Goswami, he became surprised. Rishabdev has all the mystic powers, why didn't he exhibit it? So at that time, Shukadev Goswami says that a person who has achieved perfection in devotional service, he is reluctant to exhibit his mystic perfection. Why? Because he doesn't trust the mind. The mind is like a wild animal. A hunter might capture a wild animal, but even though he has captured a wild animal, he doesn't become loose while dealing with the wild animal. He is very careful that the wild animal does not escape. Even though it is completely captured, he is careful not to let loose the wild animal, run away again. So similarly, a devotee of the Lord, he is very careful not to trust the mind. Because exhibiting mystic power or mystic perfection is like giving a chance for the mind to again dwell in material sense gratification. Again to indulge in sense enjoyment. So the devotee doesn't want to take any chance. So he doesn't exhibit any mystic powers. Otherwise, a pure devotee of the Lord automatically has all the mystic powers with him. And so, Krishna says that the perfection of mysticism is devotional service. Any questions anybody has on this subject? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.